Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and this is the 14th edition of the Long Run Archives, where I'm joined by Brett Hornig and Jeff Colt to talk about race performances that defined the 2010s, UTMB's decision to part ways with Corinne Malcolm, the latest lineups for next year's Black Canyon 100K and Hard Rock 100, the new Strava messaging feature, and a bunch of other stuff. Before we get started, though, thanks to NAC for supporting the show. NAC is the official nutrition partner of Singletrack because I'm a big believer in what they do and how they do it. The idea behind their products is simple. The ingestion of a single macronutrient, like carbohydrates, is not enough for the vast majority of athletes to fuel ultra distances. After a few hours of effort, you need the complete nutrition approach to go farther for longer. So many athletes are bonking in the 100K and 100-mile distances because they're using products made for shorter efforts that overuse sugar and lack other critical macros. And that's the problem NAC solves. It's sports nutrition made for the ultra distances. If you're curious, head over to their website, NAC.com, check out what they got. And if you're interested in purchasing something, use code SINGLETRACK15 for 15% off your next order. With that, let's get on to the show. All right, so Long Run Archives number 14 with co-host Brett Hornig and frequent collaborator Jeff Colt. We cannot bury the lead. I think most people probably want us to start here and then proceed. And the news is UTMB parting ways with Corinne Malcolm, firing Corinne Malcolm. Brett, do you want to provide a little bit of a summary of what happened here and maybe some of the details before we kind of offer our takes?
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I mean, Corinne Malcolm is my like race commentator, like inspiration, my idol. I think Corinne's just such a pro at her job and what she does, and has always been a voice for the sport, especially pertaining to equal coverage, towards the women's races. And that has been, you know, an uphill battle that she's been fighting at UTMB. And I think it's been so good that she has been in the booth for so many races, not only calling the races, but being a voice like in the studio for that sort of thing. And, you know, it's not just commentating at the UTMB races. Like, Corinne's voice expands, you know, much beyond just those races. And I think with the current situation that happened with UTMB and Gary Robbins over in Whistler, there's just additional conversation that's come from all those. And then shortly after that, Corinne posts on Instagram that she is and UTMB have parted ways and they do not wish to continue working with her. And, you know, I can't help but think that it is a culmination of the events that have, you know, transpired over the last X number of months. And, you know, I was just shaking my head at that decision, being like, what are you guys doing over there? How is that for the timeline? Jeff, anything to add to that?
Yeah. I think Corinne mentioned that she joined a meeting that was going to cover, broadcasting and commentating at Doi Inthanon, and thought she was getting on that meeting to talk about commentating at the, or, you know, for the race, and learned that she was fired. And I think the criticism was that Corinne could not be publicly critical of UTMB while being a spokesperson for the race. And I think that's where there was just a misunderstanding. Like, Corinne is a paid contracted commentator for the race. She's not a spokesperson for UTMB. And I think anyone in the audience and, you know, spectators would say it's a really good thing that Corinne pushes back and demands more equitable coverage for both, you know, the top women in the race, but in general, she asks organizers to do better. So, at the moment, I would not want to be the PR person for UTMB, in the wake of the, UTMB Whistler situation. I think North American respect for that race organization has seemingly taken a dip.
Yeah, if you're a professional runner in this sport, if you're an operator in this sport, and if you're a fan or an observer of the sport, you definitely know who Corinne Malcolm is. You appreciate her contributions to the sport. So I'm at a loss for, at the very least, why we haven't seen anything from a PR standpoint explaining this decision. Like, I don't know, Jeff, have you heard anything from Corinne, if she's received any further explanation for why she was let go? Do you know, was it specifically because of UTMB earlier this year?
Yeah, it was for being critical of UTMB in a like constructive criticism way. Let's be clear. It wasn't flippant. I think a lot of pro trail runners are trying to navigate how to talk about this subject when, you know, sponsors and in a lot of ways like careers are or can be tied to success at UTMB. From my position, I know that UTMB is one of the most important races for On Running, and it's I'm not going to go loudmouthing them. I can make decisions to not take money from them or travel support to any of their North American races or to, you know, go and show up in Europe. But I think Corinne's criticism was feedback that they need to do better than just showing the women's leader or the top three at the UTMB races in Chamonix, and that they should show the same 10 deep that they're showing on the men's side. When they weren't able to meet that, she was, publicly critical of their shortcomings. That's a failure. That is failing the runners in the sport. That is failing the spectators. So that's the criticism from UTMB and the reason for their parting.
Offline, we were trying to make sense of this and understand how, you know, what, how was it in UTMB's interest to make this decision? I'm struggling to think of anything, unless they've just decided, especially after the Gary Robbins incident, they're just going to punt. They're going to punt North America from their 2024 and beyond marketing plans and investments. And they're going to like deem this region of the world a lost cause. Is there anything you guys can think of?
I mean, that's what I wrote down too. Is UTMB doubling down on just not catering to North America? Like, is that in their 5-year plan to just make us invisible from a, you know, European trail racing audience? Because it sure seems like they're just kind of starting to quietly, not even quietly, just silence North America. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm wondering if their bottom line even changes that much if, you know, theoretically they just pull out of North America in general and just don't even have any by UTMB races here, because the races themselves, they're not that big. You know, they have plenty others in Europe. You know, they could probably have 2 races in Europe that would equal all of the entry field sizes for all the races they have here in North America. So then they have their races in Europe plus Asia. It's like, well, from a money standpoint, maybe we just quit trying with North America because these guys complain too much about equal coverage, and we'll just go double down and make our money over in Europe. I mean, that's sure what it feels like. I hope I'm wrong, because I really like to see the globalization of the sport, but I would like for it to be done, I guess, in a way that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, again, Corinne was part of the English speaking coverage for UTMB, which was one of 4 or 5 live streams going on. You're right in that there's a bigger audience for UTMB outside of North America than there is just in North America. I think there's a lot of history of ultra running in North America. I think they very intentionally tied their coattails, and I'm saying it that way, to Western states. I don't think Western states needed to get anything really from UTMB. So I don't think they're trying to pull out of North America. I think that, you know, Finn's done a really good job of trying to seek out sources who are familiar with Ironman and what it looks like to grow an organization significantly. And, you know, if an organization is trying to grow and there's a squeaky wheel or a loud kind of protesting voice, you know, that's a collaborator. I think they might just see it as an easier thing to cut that person out of the picture. You know, kind of the path of least resistance. However, with both Gary Robbins and Corinne Malcolm, I think they maybe don't quite give the North American ultra running scene credit for how behind these people, you know, the trail running community is. Corinne has her own podcast. Corinne is like a, you know, kind of key role in the Western States coverage, in the editor in chief for Free Trail and involved with all Free Trail publication. Gary, in a like synthesized version, is the face of trail running in Canada. So it's not doing them any favors by specifically stepping on these guys' toes.
To me, all of these events in the last two or three, I guess it's 4 months, have proven that there's a massive gap between the people that are in this sport purely to participate and check off like an adventure box or a lifestyle box versus the people that are like in the scene, watchdogging the culture of it and the progress on the professional side. That group of people that know who Corinne is and appreciate who Corinne is and what she's doing, and people like you and Brett, it's just such a small, tiny piece of the pie, unfortunately. And I say that with bolded words, like, unfortunately, it's such a small portion of the sport that I think we're finding that they can get away with these decisions and not really face the consequences. That's my current prediction. I want to be wrong, but that's how I currently feel about it.
I've been kind of prodding to like learn more about what's going on in the Professional Trail Runners Association, because I'm curious what they're talking about. And, you know, they had a meeting, I think, last week, and I was like, are the meeting minutes available? Like, where can I read these meeting minutes? You know, Corinne's a focal part of that organization as well. And that was created for a number of reasons, but my understanding was one of them was the inequity of like TDS just not having any awards, like, or prize purse. Like, that race just didn't get it a couple of years ago, and there being inequity in prize purses for men and women. And basically, like, the PTRA, let's create a organization of trail runners so there's a unified voice to be able to talk to an organization like UTMB, like the Golden Trail Series, like, you know, Cirque Series, or whatever it is, where there's athletes being attracted to these races, either for the exposure or competitiveness, money. So I don't know. I would imagine that the PTRA isn't stoked on the Gary Robbins or Corinne Malcolm situation, and that they'll likely be chatting directly with UTMB. On that, like, kind of drivers of the community and the sport, I want to give a shout out to Dylan Bowman. He got lambasted on social media for not having a more outraged response, over Corinne's separation from UTMB. Dylan does a ton for the sport, a ton for this community. He's one of the few people whose all of his chips are in on trail running. And, when Corinne posted that she was separating from UTMB, that she was fired from UTMB on the commentating front, not a lot of information was available. And it's a little unfair to, you know, ask some of the bigger figures in the sport who have a lot invested in different partnerships, relationships, race organizers and whatnot to, you know, give a middle finger or like a flippant response. I think, want to recognize that.
It's pretty crazy in this day of age that as soon as news breaks, you are expected to have a solidified opinion instantaneously. Like, we don't even value anymore this ability to like sit back, meditate, even just for a few hours and just like observe the situation, talk to all the actors involved. But no, you need to like be there right on the spot, weighing in, closing ranks. Like, that's, if we can change one thing from this, well, maybe a few things, this would be one of them, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think the mob mentality reactions can be a little dangerous, and it's unfair to put that type of immediate, like, well thought out expectation, you know, or response expectation on people who have everything in their life invested in this sport. You know, as like I mentioned, like I know that my sponsor would prefer me to go and run UTMB. That's the focused race for their year after year. And like, I'm not in a place, I wasn't in a place, and I'm still not, to, you know, write off UTMB. I can make decisions not to take money from them or not to go, you know, to their races, but I definitely don't want to close the door on that relationship, as so much is in motion and so much is changing in our sport, especially in the last couple of years.
Yeah. And it's not like professional trail running contracts get like amended every single year, where the bonus structures can just like change from year to year on. Everyone's like, oh, we heard that the people are not happy with UTMB. Okay. For the bonuses for all athletes towards 2024, we'll just allocate UTMB bonus money somewhere. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, the contracts were written years ago, and like some of them are going to extend through like 3, 4, 5 more years, and they're going to have like UTMB bonuses. So that adds another layer of intricacy for sure in regards to the business aspect and the professional, like the professionalization of that side of the sport.
Yeah. Nikki Kimball had a great response to the Gary Robbins situation. Hillary Allen had a great response to Corinne's post, where like, I can say with certainty that their actions are not good for the trail running community and not good optics. And that's the wrong thing to do, to like basically take, you know, Gary Robbins' child out from under him with that, WAM race series. And, you know, Corinne is putting a lot of passion into these commentations and showing up with notes on a bunch of different athletes. It's something that she cares so much about, and it's not commentating for UTMB that she cares so much about. Let me be clear. It is this community. It is the sport that she cares so much about. And that's a way that, yeah, she gets to express that. She gets to share in the joy of these athletes, of the spectators. So yeah, it's not, like, not a great move on UTMB's front. But there's a lot tied up in it, especially for the bigger figures in the sport. Like, to look at Courtney and ask, like, Courtney, how come you haven't told UTMB to, like, you know, take a hike? Like, that's not quite how things can roll.
And another thing that I think about now is, think about the precedent that this sets for all future members of the commentating teams at UTMB events. How is there going to be any fun in the process? How is there going to be any, I'm trying to think of the word, like, spontaneity, off the cuff type commentary, well-deserved critique of whatever situation they're involved in? How is there going to be any of that following this? And who's going to want to even step into that seat after this, knowing that like the very best person was just asked and they're super talented and they stand for all those principles in the community? Who is going to want to follow that? Nobody's going, I mean, that I can tell, no one's going to want to step into that seat.
Yeah. That's terrifying. I mean, you have to, you're like, oh my gosh, I have to watch everything I say or I might get fired. I mean, like, you and I talking about, you know, Wheel of Cheese being cut for 3 hours instead of watching the women's race go through Courmayeur, like, Finn, you and I have immediately lost our jobs.
Well, here's an idea. You just have the live stream going and then different commentators.
That's what we did.
That scan to YouTube and commentate over it. Yeah. And,
the biggest problem with that was, the coverage to commentate on was lacking during the hours in which North America was awake, which for us, we were like, dude, this is like a very important part of the race. Cause you know, you're going through Courmayeur and then going up Grand Col Ferret and stuff, like, middle of the night into the morning over there. For us, we're like prime time watching hours in the evening into the kind of late hours at night. And there was a period of like almost 2 hours where we just ran out of things to talk about. And then it was just, what was it? People watching people.
People watching people.
Watching aid station workers cut a wheel of cheese.
I was trying to think of examples of this happening in other sports and in other media outlets. This happens pretty frequently at ESPN, actually, where someone well-regarded gets axed for whatever reason. The best case study that I could think of was Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons got fired by ESPN. I think it was back in 2014. He was openly critical of a lot of editorial and operational decisions that the company was making. And really, in his tenure there, he presided over one of the best eras of ESPN from a content standpoint. They axed him, and in a lot of ways, it was never the same in a negative way again. And it showed how valuable Bill was, because he went on and, you know, made The Ringer a lot more sophisticated and, you know, just sold to Spotify recently. And so I say that to say that I don't see this playing out for Corinne in a negative way. I think it's a bummer that she loses a seat at the most important live stream currently in the sport, but she's not going to struggle to find work. I think she could get any commentary job she wants from here on out.
She's a heck of a coach too.
And she's a heck of a coach. She's going to be fine.
Sorry, Trails and Tarmac, but
it's fair. It's a friendly battle.
One of the questions you guys poised was like, do any significant athletes or contenders boycott next year? Does like Western States cut ties with UTMB or change, you know, the golden ticket races? I don't think Western States is going to cut ties with UTMB. It would be really cool to see the golden ticket races for Western States not all be part of the UTMB series. I love Bandera. Chris at Tejas Trails did such a good job, and like, sad for me to see that race no longer be a golden ticket race. I think the small race directors are something that Western States could put a foot forward and really protect and try to keep circulating what those golden ticket races are. That could be really good for North American ultra running. That said, tomorrow is like UTMB Thailand. I'm really excited about the athletes who might get into Western States from that race. It's introducing a really high caliber of global athlete to Western States. As far as significant athlete boycotts, like, I think Zach Miller just put up a poll saying, hey, with this happening, what race should I do? And everyone chose Hard Rock, and Dale got him into Hard Rock. So Zach's doing Hard Rock. Will he also do UTMB? Who knows? But I think that's a pretty cool example of one of the top athletes just being like, let the people decide.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to read through the contract between Western States and UTMB. I mean, I'm sure it's legally binding, or, you know, Western States can't just cut ties with UTMB. I'm sure the buyout for that is a huge amount of money that a nonprofit is not going to fork over to UTMB. You know, like, I'm sure it's done in such a way that makes it pretty binding for some number of years. I'd be curious if in that contract there is also some minimum amount of golden ticket races that have to be by UTMB, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we might not ever know that, but that would be very interesting to see what that entire relationship is like. But kind of like what Jeff said, though, I like the international golden ticket races. You know, they don't necessarily have to be by UTMB, but I do like how there are opportunities to race your way into Western States, not just in North America. Cause, you know, as you said, like, Doi Intanon's going on right now, and it's going to be a good race. It's going to make the Western States field better.
I have an idea.
Oh, he's got an idea.
World Trail Majors becomes the international outlet for golden ticket races. So Ultra Trail Mount Fuji, what is it like?
Hong Kong 100 in January. That's perfect.
Perfect.
Right? Yeah, that's a great idea. I think Brett's point is spot on, right? Like, I was doing public relations for Hoka when the transition of Western States sponsorship went from Hoka to Ultra. And like, those are typically 3 to 5 year contracts, right? Mm. So like, that's why we're seeing Hoka at UTMB and Western States year after year. I'm sure that the Western States UTMB partnership does commit some of those races to UTMB in the future. I also think the only way that they would turn down, you know, that check that's being written to support that nonprofit is if Brett Hornig individually started a Kickstarter and raised, you know, $100,000 to contribute to Western States. So the pressure's all on Brett. But I think we can make this change.
Is $100,000 enough?
Probably not.
I feel like that's probably not, like, we might need to add another zero.
The last thing I would add on sort of like the boycott front, I think it's always an individual decision. I would certainly not judge someone positively or negatively in either direction. I think that there are still reasons to participate in UTMB if it's right for you. I think if it's not right for you and you want to go in a different direction, that's great too. But I think there are compelling reasons to go both ways, and it just comes down to everyone needing to reflect on their values and kind of making a decision around whether, you know, the current controversies challenge those or they don't. And you know, if so, where you draw the line. But if there are people that we know and love that are at UTMB next year, including ourselves covering it in some capacity, like, great. I think it's fine. But this stuff sucks. Like, losing Corinne sucks. The stuff against Gary sucks. And it's going to be a tough pill to swallow between now and then, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting way to think of it. Corinne was ousted for pushing back and asking UTMB to do better. By ousting Corinne, the North American trail community is all now looking at UTMB and asking them to do better. So that one squeaky wheel just became, you know, this like massive force of momentum. But a bunch of people being like, come on. Like, it's always interesting as I look through comments for Corinne's post, for Gary's post, for different people's feedback on whether or not the athlete tagged UTMB or if they're just using UTMB. Kudos to Jason Koop. I respect Coop for a number of reasons, but for a guy who coaches the podiums of UTMB, CCC, whatever the race is, like, he's got such talented athletes over there. He's just telling them to, you know, he's telling it to him straight and tagging them in it. So maybe the folks who are adjacent to the professional athletes in the sport are the ones who can be the most directly outspoken.
Yeah, to that, I mean, you kind of stated it, but to that point, it begs the question, like, who is obligated to some extent, get political in the situation and at least let their audiences know, you know, where they stand on this and what they plan to do? Coop has been pretty clear about it. And I'm not saying there's like a time band around it, but is anybody obligated to comment on it one way or another?
Yeah, and like, I'm more comfortable getting political for like next year's election and like Colorado District 3 and making sure we get the congressman that or woman that we want than I am like telling an entire race organization that is currently shaping the face of our sport to you know, take a hike.
Thanks to Rabbit for supporting the show. Rabbit is the official apparel partner of Singletrack. And, you know, lately, as colder temps have set in here in the Salt Lake City area, I have become a frequent user of their new Cocoon 2.0 product. It's an advanced sweatshirt with a built-in turtleneck that pulls up into a secure hood and breathable face mask, which I love. There's also thumb holes and watch windows to keep your hands warm without all the fuss, plus a water-resistant finish and fleecy interior for the most comfortable protection. It's truly the real deal. Again, winter is basically here. You might need to update your kit, so if you're curious, go check it out and use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout when purchasing for 20% off your next order. Also, thanks to Oladance for supporting the show. Oladance makes headphones tailored almost perfectly for mountain ultra trail running, and it all starts with battery life. Most of their lineup comes with 19 hours of battery life, which could last the majority or the entirety of a single ultra for some of you listeners out there. I've put them to the test in the harshest conditions, rain, snow, sunshine, heat, and cold, and they always hold up. Head over to oladance.com/ST and use code ST at checkout for $30 off their OWS2 line. With that, let's get back to the show.
Next up, we got Hard Rock announcements, Black Canyon start list growing, Western States start list growing. starting with hard rock, Jeff, what's exciting you about next year's lineup?
That I didn't get in?
Yeah, apology. Yeah, we're sorry about that. That definitely.
Excites you? That excites you?
No, that was just the gut response. You know, really, Finn, I sought out this podcast to get a, you know, vocal microphone so that maybe Dale would hear how much I want to run hard rock. And every time I've been on this show, I've said out loud, maybe two or three times, not even in response to the questions you're asking, Jeff Colt wants to run hard rock. And it didn't work.
So, maybe you need to throw a wager in there. Like,
I know. I wasn't one of Dale's picks.
Dale.
The first sub 20 hour performance at Hard Rock.
Yeah. Like, I will break the course record or I will pay 10x the entry fee.
What excites me about Hard Rock? Zach Miller definitely excites me about Hard Rock. Some of Dale's picks were actually published this year. And it's a list of some really excellent runners who, I think will be bringing some fast and strong, talent to Silverton next year. Camille Bruas, is really exciting. I think the women's field looks for the whole, like top 10, the women's field looks stacked. That's my gut reaction. I've always wanted to see Zach run that race and, we get to see it this year. And then the women's field is going to be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, the women's field was definitely what stood out the most to me after looking over the results. I mean, just like notable names that are in for Hard Rock next year is like Courtney DeWalter, Camille Brios, Tara Dower, Katarina Harmuth, and then Sabrina Stanley's on the wait list. You know, there's other names as well of people who, like, there's a lot of people who have recently been in the top 10 at Hard Rock who are going to be coming back. It's the deepest women's field that I can remember, I feel like, probably ever. So that's just going to be really exciting. That's going to be amazing. And then, you know, on the men's side, Francois Dane is back in, and then Zach Miller. That's going to be one of the most hyped up, you know, battles of the year, of just the Francois versus Zach. I mean, we had Jim versus Zach at UTMB. I mean, there's been a lot of like these one-on-one or maybe throw a third person in, just like fist fights at Hard Rock that have been pretty awesome. And I feel like Zach versus Francois is going to be another one of them, but we were also,
is Orléans going to come back? Cause I didn't see
anything yet
on like the Iron Far list, but like to me, Orléans was going for Francois' course record last year and was just like on one.
Oh, 100%.
The two of them getting to race with Zach in the mix would be very fun.
Oh, it would be bonkers. That would be the coolest thing ever. Yeah, just with how ballsy his race was. And then, you know, we've got, you know, the Masters field on the men's side is shaping up to be the Clash of the Titans. I don't know, because Masters is like 40 plus, but we're trying to figure out like, there's like a 50 plus group as well. That's awesome. You know, there's like Carl Meltzer versus Jeff Browning versus Paul Terranova. But then like,
Jeff's on the wait list right now, but he's high up there.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. But then we have
Ludo
Pommeret, one of Dale's picks. You know, Ludo gets to be, I mean, you can put him into either conversation. I mean, it's like, oh, he's going to be an awesome Masters runner to watch. He's also probably just going to try to win the whole thing. And I'm not going to count him out because Ludo is Ludo and Ludo does Ludo things.
Paced Orléans last year. Got a good preview of the course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Katarina Harmuth. I think that was Katie Scheid's Euro Runner of the Year on the women's side.
Yep.
She's one of Dale's picks. She'll be coming in. I've heard of Courtney DeWalter, the 2023 finisher and winner. I think Courtney's going back.
Yep.
The women's side is definitely deep, and on the kind of women's master side, also notably deep. I think I guess some of these are top waitlist, Darla and Nikki Kimball.
Mm-hmm. But one of the other things too, I guess, for Courtney is, as of right now, Hard Rock is the only of the big three races that she did that she is like officially going to come back for in 2024, because she hasn't announced a return to Western States or UTMB. And I mean, the thought of like an amount fresher Courtney at Hard Rock would be very exciting.
Yeah, I'm wondering. So it does look like she declined her Western States entry, right?
Yeah.
Declined that. So I'm curious that, is the decision to go all in on Hard Rock because she can get, you know, X amount more out of herself? Is there some other reason? Is it a part of another, you know, double or triple type effort? I'm very curious on that front.
Were you pointing to Finn's Wasatch poster?
No, I was pointing like, if she goes all in on Hard Rock, like there's no doubt, like she could just win it.
Yeah.
I was going to say on the women's side, is it really a battle for second place and Courtney is just on her own island there in first place?
Depends. Maybe she runs the World Marathon Majors next year or something. I want to give a special shout out to Jamil Curry and Nick, who are both in. Mm-hmm. But for Jamil, I got to witness the live stream coverage that he volunteered, funded out of his own pocket and put on last year. And I don't think that man asks for much, but his horn needs to be tooted way more. Air Vapa does a ton for the sport, and seeing how hard he worked at Hard Rock for that live coverage last year, it's going to be really fun watching him race this year. And I hope I can be back and, have the microphone on him so we can hear his play by play.
Dude, yeah. Jamil did so much for the live stream last year. Being in the studio with him, like the dude didn't sleep from like 2 days before Hard Rock until the race finished. So like for Jamil to run the race and there to be a successful live stream, like it definitely can be done. He's got a great team, but like Jeff, we're going to have to step our game up.
Jamil had a great race here. I think 10 years ago, 9 or 10 years ago, ran the last 75 miles of the course, allegedly the best 75 miles of his life. And I did just see on Instagram that he was lamenting not having run much recently, but he's getting back into it. So we could be looking at a motivated Jamil Curry for this race, which if true, he's a threat. He's a contender for sure.
Plus there's got to be that brotherly competition as well.
Just in terms of like awe-inspiring years, what Claire Banworth did this year.
Oh my gosh.
In terms of the number of races she ran, that's another one that like, I wonder if Claire does more of a focus on something like Hard Rock next year, if she, could be quite a bit faster and more in that mix for the first place or podium. Mm-hmm. But like she ran 100 basically every week. Unspeakable.
Yeah. It's like 100 or more. Like 100 miles minimum race.
Yeah,
every
530
week
for the Colorado Trail, like
Tahoe 200. Just
yeah,
throw those all in there.
How about you want to talk about Black Canyon? Because I was looking at the list earlier today, and there's at least 30 guys on the men's side who I think could be contending for top 10 at this race. Could be contending for a golden ticket. And then on the women's side currently, it's at least 20 deep. There's 50 like heavy hitters at this race, let alone probably some random ballers in there. But like I think I asked it in the score today, is Black Canyon starting to brush up against Western States as like the most competitive ultra trail race in the country right now? If you go to Ultra Sign Up, I'm not blowing smoke, this is insane.
Yeah. I mean, cool. You've got to scroll for a while. And you keep finding like elite people are like, oh, they could win. Oh, they could win. I'm like 150 people down. Oh, they could win.
I love that you're seeing competitors coming from Japan to race Black Canyon. Not only that, like elites. Black Canyon has every opportunity to pass Western States in terms of the competitive field because there isn't a limit on the elites that can get in. It's a tricky time of year for a lot of people, to have that fitness and like carry it through at least, you know, 6 weeks to 3 months of winter training. If you're, not in Florida, Arizona, California, in that situation, if you're anywhere else, the field is so, so deep. And Finn, I know you've scrolled it, but I have a feeling I know who your dark horse favorite is. Who's your dark horse favorite on the men's side?
I mean, it has to be Eric. Well, I shouldn't even say dark horse, but Eric LaPuma.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Truehart Brown. You know, Truehart Brown's back in the race, defending champion.
In an ideal world, we have Truehart and Eric taking the tickets to Western States. Although I love everybody in this field. ELE, I love everybody here. But yeah, those two. I mean, Truehart should just get an auto entry no matter what. Like he got, yeah, I'm gonna hold my tongue, but he should have already run Western States by now.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it seems every time I look over the list, like I just looked at it twice. There was like 10 names that I just skipped over. And then looked at him. I was like, oh, Jared Hazen and Tim Frerichs and Stephen Kirsch, they're all on this too. Like we got like the locals are like throwing down here.
Ryan Montgomery, even though he has an auto entry, he's going back just to have fierce competition. I have so much respect for that.
You know what we're not getting is we're not getting any watering down of the fields because of Bandera and Black Canyon being so close to each other anymore. Like anyone who was going to run Bandera is now just all in on Black Canyon. There's no like, this is the second chance for the Bandera people.
It also just, it was that Black Canyon was the second of five golden ticket races.
Oh, we're getting, now we're it's getting three fourth. Tickets each now too.
Yeah. It's now the second to last golden ticket race, right? All of them, the timelines have moved up to the fall. So really after this, it's just canyons.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's so deep. You're right. And I've got a dark horse here in Carbondale, Keegan Aldani, who's a speedy dude. I really want to run with him more, but he runs every morning at 4:30. I have a flexible work schedule. So why? But, he looks really fit and is excited about it.
Couple other names: Hayden Hawks, Tim Tollefson, Adam Mary, Rod Farvard, Mark Hammond, Eric Sorensen, JP Giblin, Dan Green, Trace, Rajpal Panu,
Ryan Miller. It goes on. Stephen Kirsch,
Mekhi Clemens. God damn.
Andrew Bumbelow.
Caleb Neff.
There's Andrew Bumbelow.
Andy Bumbelow, dude. He's the fastest person in the field. He's got like a 13, 11, 13, 12, 5K to his name from like not that long ago. The women's field's super fascinating too, because there's a handful of ballers who are moving up to the 100K distance, you know, like Rachel Tomicek is going to run Black Canyon. I see MK Sullivan is on this 100K entrance list. You know, we've also got like, you know, like Heather Jackson is going to race Black Canyon again. Like there's people who are just showing up like for competition.
Rachel Drake.
Is she signed up?
Rachel Drake, that marathon, that CIM.
I thought she was going to be signing up.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen her name on here. No, she's on here. Yeah.
She is? Okay. I just didn't know if you were spoiling the big secret and I was about to say like, you're going to have to cut that out.
We can cut it out. If it is
no,
a super, I'll cut
I
it
see
out.
Her name right here.
Rachel Drake. Okay, Rachel Drake is signed up for the Black Canyon 100K. Her CIM was so baller.
Was so.
I know.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Anna Mae Flynn, long road and rehab from some running injuries that kept her sidelined, is now training and seeming very fit. I'm excited to see Anna Mae on the starting line. We also have like Addie Bracey, Devin Yanko, Casey Lake Teague, these like just
the legends
stalwarts who are showing up.
Yeah. I'm excited for that preview episode. Didn't mean to turn this bit into like a whole race preview, but like that's just where we're at in December right now. Like there's still people who are probably training, thinking of maybe trying to gain entry, who are not yet on this entrance list.
Goes on forever. Amanda Basham, Riley Brady. There's a lot of depth. The depth is deep.
The depth is deep. We got to get those shirts made one of these days. One of these days we'll get those shirts made. All right. Yeah. What's next?
So, Speedland versus Normal, merits of innovation versus replication in the shoe industry. For those that are not attuned to trail running Instagram, there was a post from one of the folks at Speedland who pointed out that Normal may or may not be copying an element of Speedland's technology in their own shoes, and this created within that post, you know, a long spirited discussion about that. And I mean, Brett, you're our resident shoe expert here. What were your immediate thoughts about not necessarily the technical elements, but the overall philosophy of choosing to, like, I guess, copy from another company?
Well, one, they make it sound like that's never been done before. That's like literally how like any good ideas ever work. Like if anyone comes out with a good idea, there's 10 other copycat companies that try and replicate it without getting sued. And sometimes one of those copycat companies does a better job. Is Normal going to do a better job than Speedland? We don't know yet. That shoe doesn't even have a release date. Like they're still in the testing phase for it. But the other thing that came to mind was like, it seems like Speedland had totally forgotten that Adidas actually did this like 6 years ago or 8 years ago. They had a Continental rubber cased shoe where you dropped in different midsoles. Like it's not a new idea. Speedland just executed on it a little better, and like maybe Normal will as well. But like, isn't it also, you know, wouldn't Speedland be taking this as a compliment that another company, especially one that like, I don't think Kilian Jornet is like on paper their head of innovation, but like definitely one of the biggest innovators within that company, thinks that's a good idea and wants to try it himself. Like, isn't that an amazing compliment? Like people are going to buy Speedland shoes because they see, oh wow, Normal made this. And now there's two competitors, you know, you see it in like film when big major movies come out, oftentimes there's another movie that's almost the same that also comes out at the same time because everyone goes and sees both. Like there's a good chance people are just buying both of these shoes. You know, it's going to be good for the shoe industry. And, you know, I think they also said like, it would have been nice to collab on this. I'm like, what world exists where that's a thing where like two small competing companies are just like, oh yeah, let's just collab and make a shoe. So I think it's good.
Mean Girls. Why can't we all just be friends?
It's like, no, you don't have to be friends.
I think just staying in the shoe space, there's so much precedent for this. It should definitely be received as a compliment that Normal is like corroborating the efficacy or like proof of this concept. Mm-hmm. But the more recent obvious one would be like carbon speed plates, or PBAX foam, which like PBAX was a trademark thing and every other company was just like trying to figure out what is this formula, how do we replicate it in an effective way to have this 4% advantage. Going back in the trail space, like Zach Miller and I were chatting in Silverton this summer about Skechers. Skechers made a high stack height rockered shoe called
The Shape Up.
The name, The Shape Up. Did it get marketed to like elite trail athletes or the like outdoor community? No. Did it kind of bust? Yeah. He got targeted toward like nurses and mothers. What ended up happening? Hoka ran with a similar idea of high stack height and a rocker midsole. They started with an audience that they wanted to focus on, which was, you know, trail athletes doing these big races. And once they gained that market, they moved to nurses and moms and reached the broader audience. But now you look across the board, no shoe company, including ones that were literally only making minimalist shoes in 2010, no shoe company doesn't make a high stack height, you know, 30 plus millimeter stack height shoe. So it's like, it's just proof.
Yeah, like that's just how it works.
Good for Speedland. It's a really cool idea. I bet we'll see other companies copy it too.
And at the end of the day, the innovators are always going to be one step ahead of the quote unquote copiers. So if you're worried about copying, you kind of take peace in knowing that like they're kind of waiting for you in your next step. And by that time, you're already working on features and benefits that are ahead of what you just produced. So I don't know. And I mean, we're all, like Brett, you said earlier, we're all just riffing off each other. Like, this show is a compilation of like 8 different other podcasts that we copy off all the time. And I mean, I thought back to our Western States production. We just lifted the Sidious Mag playbook at the World Trail Championships or the World Track and Field Championships. That's all we did.
We asked and them for it.
We asked them for it. We literally called them up and asked them for it. And then we got copied, and it's great. And that the sport gets better. Don't know. It's just like, I take no issue with it. No issue whatsoever. I think it's a moot point. I think, none of this scarcity mindset stuff.
Yeah. I hear where they're coming from though. Like, being a company with a very small margin, and how many new shoe companies were launched in the last 5 years targeting the trail outdoor space?
Yeah, probably a few too many.
A good number, a surprising amount. Norda, Normal, Run Speedland, the one that doesn't have laces and you just put your
foot in. Naked.
Naked started making shoes. They're all competing for a margin and trying to gain more traction. So kudos to them and respect to them for at least pointing out this is copying our idea or Adidas's idea.
Yep. And for the record, conversational pace shoe reviews will absolutely get to the bottom of this, and we will let everyone know which one is better, the Speedland or the Normal.
For people that are watching on YouTube, yes, I am ironically wearing a Normal shirt right now, but Brett knows this for a fact, my favorite shoe of 2023 has been the Speedland GS Tam. So I'm equally conflicted on both sides. I just got this shirt at TRE.
My favorite shoe is the On Cloud Monster.
Oh, dude. Cloud Monster is such a good shoe, actually.
All about that speed board life.
Have I mentioned I want to run Hard Rock?
In the On Cloud Monster? And Dale, what's your shoe size?
Next up, we have this new Strava messaging feature. Brett, when this came out, what was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was like, sweet, cool. Like, this is going to be awesome. And then I started playing with it, and I'm like, I don't think there's group messages. I don't think exist yet. Or do they? They do exist.
You can message more than one person.
Oh, okay. I just have no friends. Never mind. I was messaging some people, and then I don't know, it kind of wore off where then I was like, I guess all these people I could just text anyways. And I feel weird messaging someone on Strava that I don't know at all. And then, I could send a route to you. But then that seemed like kind of most of it. Maybe I'm just not utilizing it correctly. What do you think?
I may have spoke too soon. I haven't tried to do a group message. I read something that said you can do group messaging. So I believe that feature is live.
I'll try it in real time. I'll do a group message with both of us. But Finn, what do you think?
Well, it all depends on settings, right? So you can control who's allowed to message you based on whether it's you follow them, you follow each other, or no one can message you at all. So
I can't message you, Jeff.
That's probably because it is a mutual follow and I don't follow you.
Oh my
God. I'd have to look. I don't know. For me in the Roaring Fork Valley, in this community, just speaking of how it is, in this community, I get a lot of people asking hey, what are the trail conditions on that? Or hey, could you send me that other route that you had, mentioned in some comment. I've shared my phone number on Strava a lot over the last 10 years. So the fact that this messaging, I don't think it's changing the platform all that much. For me, it's making it a lot easier to try to connect with someone who I might want to get out on a run with and also share a route.
I am glad that they did it, because I think this opens the door just for more future development. I want to see Strava continue to develop and innovate their app and make it better. And even if this doesn't move the needle too much, some other features that I would like to see within Strava, this gives me more hope that those sorts of things could potentially come to existence.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree with everything you guys said. To me, this feature makes it that much more of a networking app now. Brett, I know we've talked about this on other long run archives before, but I think that the single most underrated feature of the internet is that in 2023, 2024, you can literally contact anyone in the world with an email address and shoot your shot. And I think that like Strava is making this similarly easier on their app. So it's just, it's super cool. And like, we're in a golden age for that. So just like, I'm already starting to think of all the opportunities that this presents for hitting people up for the podcast or, you know, getting quotes on certain things we want to talk about with athletes and operators. And it just makes the endurance community that much more accessible. And yeah, there are a lot of, just for a lot of different reasons, privacy and stuff, I would never want to like initiate conversations in the comment sections of people's runs. I too have left my phone number out there and email address out there a bunch. So I think this fixes that in a good way. They haven't released the feature where you can just message anybody, even if you don't follow them or they don't follow you. So I hope they change that soon. But I think like the second and third order effects of the ability to message people is going to create so many cool networking opportunities that we can't even imagine yet.
Think of it within clubs or like run groups. And this is something I've like just been trying to launch here in Carbondale so that we do have more community as it's coming to winter time. And it can be a little hard to get out the door when it's dark and snowy and icy. But if I were to put a post in a Strava run group that says, "Hey, I'm looking to do 8 miles on Saturday. Message me if you'd want to join." Anyone can then just send me a message and I'm not having to, I guess, land my phone number there. Like that run group could drop a line and ideally create a new running partnership or friendship or training partner, whatever.
Totally.
So I think I joke that like, all right, it's officially a dating app. And we all know that Strava has been used for like, whether it's creepy stalking or like, oh, I want to like see what that person did stalking. That like anyone who doesn't want to be messaged can just turn that off. And that's a really important thing to feature.
I was just saying, I am glad that Strava did, like when they rolled out the messaging feature, like one of the very first points was like, right now, like you, when you open your Strava, they're like, "We brought to you messaging. Here are your privacy settings. Change them right now if you want to." Like, I'm glad that they didn't like just default that everyone's messaging was like totally public. Because yeah, like there definitely is like a lot of creepy, weird dudes out there who are absolutely going to message people like women on Strava. And like, that's, I was just like thinking about it. I'm like, dude, that's a huge issue. I hope that, you know, the way that Strava has the like privacy button set up, makes it so that way that does not become any further issue.
For sure. Two more benefits that I see. One, I think there are some people that are just more active and more comfortable on Strava than other social platforms. Like they don't necessarily want to be on LinkedIn or Instagram or Facebook, but they do want to hang out on Strava. So this rewards that. And then I think for sponsored athletes out there, this additional feature now makes the Strava platform even more valuable for them to their sponsors. They can kind of find creative ways to further, like you said, Jeff, with starting group runs and stuff, engage their audience. So two more possible use case benefits there, I see. How about, we had this kind of fun prompt question, race performances from the 2010s that left a huge impact on that era that you couldn't tell the story of that decade of our sport without including them. Like what were one or two that came to mind for you, Jeff?
I got a pretty big list. First one, I'll call out Jeff Rose, 2010 Western States win. The fact that it was documented in Unbreakable, it was this like legendary matchup. That win, pretty important. It's what, you know, kind of introduced Western States in more detail to me. And Ellie Greenwood's 2012 Western States course record, you know, it stood for 11 years in a time in which a lot of just the sport progressed, running got much faster. So I'll share those two first. I bet we might have also had those on our list, but let you guys go and then I'll circle back with some others.
Yeah, I also had the Unbreakable year at Western States for 2010 for those reasons of like it was such an iconic matchup. Like there was such a great buildup into the story. It was the first, like it was kind of the first ultra that was like really well documented, you know, and turned into a full length movie, which was so cool. So that definitely like. And then turns out like I was, not to mention the iconic, Killian white booty shorts, which anyone on YouTube knew I was going to say that. The other thing too, is like that it, I was living in Ashland in 2010, but I didn't know anything about the sport of trail or ultra. And like all of this was happening like right under my nose. And then I started working at Rogue Valley Runners. And like when I first started working there, cause I'm so old, we had like a DVD player hooked up to a TV and we just had one movie going on repeat. And like the first like 6 months of me working there, it was just Unbreakable on repeat. So like I've seen that movie like hundreds of times now and I'm not tired of it. another one that I wrote down was the 2014 Western States, Sally McRae getting 10th, because that created Western Time, which was Billy Yang's like first movie that really blew up. And then that, Billy's channel just blossomed from there. But like that storyline of the very first, that was like the first, like, first 6 months of the Nike Trail team, and like Sally getting racing states and like Billy getting capturing such an amazing story and then people getting to see it. And then that turning into, you know, the UTMB movie. So like, I think that that was an iconic race that, you know, probably gets forgotten about because it wasn't a win, in the form of like finishing first place. But I think it was a big win for trail running overall. I have two others written down, but I'll save those. We'll pass it over to Finn.
And I want to go in depth on all these because I think this is just a fascinating talking point, but I'm going to list off two from Twitter. The first is from Liam Aid Station Fireball, and he says, quote, "It's not a race per se, but I've heard that Crarmageddon was a pretty memorable day. And if you remember Crarmageddon, sorry, I can't even pronounce that. It was the day that Rob Crar mass uploaded all of his runs to Strava and subsequently set hundreds of CR emails to all these people in like the Flagstaff West Coast area."
Wait, that's amazing. When did that happen?
I'll have to ask Liam for the exact date. I think it must have been sometime in 2017, but Liam said it was significant because it just demonstrated the amount of work that Rob was putting in, just how like versatile and well-rounded he was, how dominant he was. And before kind of Jim Walmsley and the Coconino Cowboys stepped onto the scene, there was that like 2 to 3 year stretch between like Sage Cannaday and Jim where Rob was on his game, dominant, and just like showing like what the tip of the spear in American ultra running looked like. So that's the first
Sorry,
one.
Can yeah. we think about DeWalter Mageddon? If Courtney just drops the last 14 years of trail running.
That's the only thing that could actually crash the Strava servers. It's like Courtney's global heat map is bigger than everyone else on Strava's combined.
So here we go. Killian got too big for Solomon. Killian started normal. Courtney, too big for Strava. Courtney starts her own trail run mapping company, where just like Beyonce and Jay-Z, when they started Tidal, if you want to see Courtney's runs, you have to subscribe and join her app. Like Courtney, there you go.
How many dollars a month would you pay to subscribe to just seeing Courtney's runs get uploaded somewhere?
Probably 7 to 10.
Yeah. I think I agree.
Guys, this is the first time in single track history that I am announcing breaking news on the show. Breaking news via Twitter. This is Zach Miller saying, thanks to a nudge from Rob Crar, there will be no big races this fall, but enjoying this season has escalated a bit. On Saturday, December 9th, I will be attempting to set the supported rim-to-rim-to-rim FKT in the Grand Canyon. I will be using a GPS watch, carrying a Garmin inReach Mini for tracking. Happy trails, Zach Miller. What? So tomorrow, we're recording this on Friday, December 8th. Tomorrow, Zach Miller is going for the rim to rim terrain.
Send that to Jamil. Send that to Jamil right now so he has a chance to get over there to chase Zach in the canyon.
Obviously, this will not be breaking news to followers of the show, but
I know that's pretty. What is Jim's FKT 551 or something like that?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's gonna. Oh man, I don't know. I don't know if he gets that.
One last thank you to Kodiak Cakes for supporting the show. Kodiak was the OG believer and I believe the first ever sponsor of the show. It's been going on for 2 years now. They've been an amazing partner and they make great products too. You've probably heard me rave about their pancake mix, but it doesn't stop there. I'm a big fan of their oatmeal power cups and granola bars as well. If you're curious, if you need to stock up yourself, head over to their website, check out what they got, including the recipes section for creativity, and grab some goods. Kodiak has a special discount for Single Track listeners where you can use code SINGLETRACK15 at checkout to get 15% off your next order. Thank you so much to Kodiak Cakes. And with that, let's get back to the show.
So I've got one more, and we'll come back to Zach in a second, but I've got one more to show. And this is from David Roche. He wants to reference the women's race at TNF 50 back in 2017, because it really it set the stage for a lot of athletes who have really become relevant in the last 2 to 3 years. And not just in the top 10, but the top 20. So Ida Nielsen, Claire Gallagher, Megan Roche, Brittany Peterson, Abby Hall, Camelia Mayfield, Anne-Louise Roussette, Corinne, Kelly Wolf. I mean, that's just eight names. But the 1 to 20 in this list reads like the future of ultra running realized in 2022, 2023. So it's kind of a table setting year for American women's ultra running. And rest in peace that race.
Rest in peace, North Face 50 Mile. Dude, every year around this time, I get the post-race blues because, well, there is no race over there. It's so sad.
I'll run through a couple more. Rory Bazio, 2013 UTMB champion.
Damn it, that's another one checked off my list now.
But so fast. And Rory, just like one of my favorite people in the sport. Keeping in line with CCC TDS. I think Claire Gallagher's win there and then Katie Scheid's win, with CCC in back-to-back years, I think 2017, 2018, were pretty big for, again, the future of American women's ultra running. Courtney DeWalter, 2017, Run Rabbit Run 100.
Oh, the blind.
That she
the
got
blind
a
year.
Concussion and went blind.
Yeah, that was the blind year.
She still won, and then not even 2 months later, won the Moab 240, got on Joe Rogan's Little Diddy Show, and launched both Courtney and ultra running into a mainstream field that, like, that inflection point, like Born to Run, can probably be seen on a map, you know,
yes,
tracking awareness of ultra running. So those are some other ones probably worth mentioning. Jim Walmsley won Western States in 2018,
well, 2019, the 2016, yeah,
is probably the most, you know, most important one in his career.
Another
all
one
of our, yeah, listen, all of our like random ballers or like collegiate athletes who end up, I feel like Jim in some ways kind of set a path for collegiate athletes who are like, I want to go this way. I want to explore trails more so than try track or the marathon. So his success was definitely big in that decade.
Did you say Rory Bozio was your first one?
2013.
Yeah, Rory Bozio, 2013 UTMB.
You know, that's one of the best performances of all time.
Oh yeah. One of the best. You know what's crazy to me? She's the same age as Courtney DeWalter right now. And so, but she just left the sport in 2019. There's a big, like, what could have been there in a sense. I mean, maybe she was done. Maybe she got all out of herself, but like still had a lot of runway when she left the sport.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to just keep going until your body just like turns to dust. Yeah.
But she left in her prime.
Hey, Barry Sanders. Whereas,
Barry Sanders.
This is something I was like contemplating earlier today. Like Courtney kind of started dabbling in ultras in 2011. Like, did she know? Did she have any inkling she was going to be better at this sport than anyone ever had been? And like, she didn't have immediate success like Killian did. Killian entered the sport She's actually a couple of years older than Killian, but he entered the sport and had immediate success and, you know, has been a phenom his whole career. Courtney's got like 5 years of running races where, yeah, she's winning some races. She's running quite a bit. And then all of a sudden, like 2016 hits.
Yeah.
And every year since then, it's like, you know, rewriting what is possible as a human.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that 5-year ramp is fascinating. Like, there really was like a slow build. It was not an overnight success.
Yeah, and like that's a good thing. That's a good thing to remember. Like, people need to remember that like sometimes it does just take a few years of trying to figure it out before you figure it out.
I tell myself all the time. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like just starting to get the hang of this.
And yeah,
Courtney launches a mapping app. I'm going to subscribe because
Then you'll figure it out.
Process.
another race that I've got, I think 2017 Hard Rock, Killian Jornet, the shoulder year.
Hmm.
Just being like, he fell, he dislocated his shoulder. And everyone's like, oh, he's probably done. And then it's like, he put it in his pack as a sling and he's just like dominating everyone on the climbs and then tiptoeing the descents because it hurts so much. And then he just still wins. That was like, yeah, that was just next. Like, that was one of the few times where I was like, I don't know how Killian tops himself. And then like, that was one of the few instances where I was like, wow, I did not think he could do anything better. He goes and does that. I also wrote down 2018 Gary Robbins Barkley Marathons.
Mm.
Like that was probably the Barkley that I paid attention to the most because of Gary and like following him on Strava, seeing all the training that he was doing, just the sessions that he was putting in North Vancouver, just in so much snow, so much darkness. I was, just rooting for him. I was like, if someone puts in this much work, like, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And then to follow that story and then for, you know, Ginger Runner to make that movie from it, it was like, I mean, that's Ginger Runner's best performing movie, I think, by a pretty, pretty long ways.
Is there anything that tops Gary's relationship with Barkley? With any other athlete, any particular race, like is Jim with Western States as intense and as like intimate as Gary's relationship was with Barkley?
Okay, if we're judging strictly from a cheering perspective, Xavier Tavenard's relationship with UTMB is probably like that's going to get the most cheering because UTMB has way more fans.
Yeah,
he's got a pretty deep relationship with that race. Jim at Western States is obviously a big one. That's a great question.
Two more races that come to mind for me were races that at least to some extent made Killian look a little bit more human than he is. So Dakota Jones beating him at Transvolcania in 2012 as a 21-year-old was pretty impressive. And then Jason Schlarb tying him at Hard Rock in 2016 was another one. Examples where, like maybe on that particular day, Killian was a little bit vulnerable and American runners rose to the occasion. Kind of cool.
He bleeds. He bleeds. He's just a man.
A very US-centric take right there.
For sure. I think the other thing to note here is like I wanted to start with Jeff Rose and Unbreakable. Because of the media that went hand in hand with it. And almost every race we mentioned had notable media that went hand in hand. I really started following the sport in 2016 and there was a lot of excellent trail running media in 2016 coming on the scene. So it wasn't just Billy Yang, Run Steep, Get High, followed Hayden Hawks and Zach Miller's finish at TNF 50.
Yeah, that one's great. Like I watch that one at least 5 times a year.
So I do think it's a great decade to analyze. And I think the next level of analysis would be like what media set the tone for where we are currently from the decade of, you know, 2010 to 2020. I think Ultra Running Man, Dean Carney's book and I think Born to Run were both pre-2010, but maybe not.
It reminds me that forward progress is not always guaranteed. And I think you could make the argument that we haven't necessarily surpassed the level of quality of films that we saw from like 2010 to 2019 in the sport here in 2023. Like there was some pretty special stuff made then. And just because we're 5 years on with better cameras, better videography, more opportunities to do it, more people in the sport, that was in a way kind of a golden age of like grungy filmmaking and
independent storytelling.
I'm not sure that we're doing it necessarily better than we were then.
I mean, so much of the content that I see coming out from these races are company follows one of their athletes across the race, no matter how they do, not company or someone follows the race and then tells the story about how the race unfolded. I feel like we saw that in 2016 more than we see that now. And I would love to see, you know, maybe some independent companies throw their hat in that ring in regards to like, shoot, we know we already like, we can see now, like we can see the Black Canyon field is going to be incredible. Like we can see the Western States field is going to be incredible. It's like, cool. We now can see there's potential opportunity for like an Unbreakable style movie to be made.
Yep. Yeah. And it's just a matter of like, can you strike gold on picking the right or the relevant three or four people that end up, you know, end to end playing a major role in the race, like with Unbreakable, they kind of struck gold picking the.
Yeah, we might need to get JB Benna on a call just to look over the Western States entrance list and be like, can you pick four men and four women that we should follow? Because he'll probably be right.
Sorry, go on, Finn.
I was going to say, JB Benna, if you, for some wild reason, listen to this podcast, we'd love to have you on the show too.
On that note, you guys are talking more like race specific media that's been produced. Solomon's series with Killian from like the early 2010s, like basically Killian running around the world. Amazing. And then I'd go ahead and say anything that Ricky Gates has made.
Yes.
Is my favorite trail running content. I think Ricky's ability to tell stories. It's not like, he runs for Solomon, but it's not Solomon. It's like, that is just his mind, his vision. It's really special. So I think in the same way that these race content can be really interesting when you have a very special athlete, I put Sophia Lockley up there. I'd put Remy Bonnet up there. Courtney already is up there. Courtney's content's amazing, but like getting to follow Remy or Sophia, on like these, you know, whatever uphill runs, the quest to break 30 minutes in the VK for Remy, like that's going to be really engaging because you have a generational talent. What I'm more interested in is like the spiritual, like, we don't, you know, have Joe Grant making content as frequently anymore. These folks who were making content that very much was like the philosopher ultra runner like mentality. To me, that's the void that I want filled.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, it's every single generation, it seems like, has their type of storyteller, maybe two or three types if they're lucky. And I mean, I guess maybe the last question I have in this area is like, do we have a type for our generation, if we're talking about like the 2010s or not the 2010s, the 2020s and the athletes in this moment, like, do we have a storyteller that has a certain style that kind of maps to the era, or are we still looking for it? Are we in a transitional moment?
I'm going to have to put some more thought into that question and answer it at a later time.
Future LRA.
Yeah. I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think Satisfy, is that what it's called? Satisfy Running? Yeah, I think.
They make expensive clothes.
Are they doing the like kind of partnership with Mike?
Versteeg.
Versteeg, Mike Versteeg?
Yep, that is Satisfy.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of potential. with like they are choosing people in the sport who like are actually approaching life or they're running differently. I feel really bad because he's one of my favorite people to follow in running, but Salt Lake City runner who I think maybe dabbles with Satisfy.
Blaine Benitez.
Yeah. Like Blaine's, I want to follow that story. He's creating some really unique routes and link ups. And like, that's, I guess maybe the more philosopher runner that I think could be, put on a storytelling stage in a really interesting way. The like prepping for the race content isn't what gets me the most excited.
So there's still room. There's room in the space for content definitely. To grow.
And good, like these smaller shoe brands who are coming onto the scene, like great content that's engaging is a great way to catapult a brand. I'm sure we'll see something like that out of Normal. Killian's always been pretty sharp on the content side.
Maybe a couple more talking points to discuss before we close up. This one I kind of added last minute, but it got me excited. We had a listener post it on Instagram. What are the next small and up and coming races that you think are going to be huge for whatever reason in the next 3 to 5 years and why? Starting with you, Brett.
Gosh,
even wishing it, like not necessarily predicting it, but wishing that they get to a certain stature.
Yeah, I mean, one of the ones, it's like kind of, there's like two that are, it's like already happening. Like they're already pretty big races, but it's like happening more. It was like Black Canyon 100K and the Javelina 100 mile. Those two are like both on paper, they like check all the boxes to be one of the most competitive races just in the world. And like, I know there's a lot of people like moaning and groaning that it's not a mountain race. And you're right, that's true. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it's still a very exciting race to follow, because when you put that many people on a start line, yeah, I mean, you can make them run 5 laps in the desert. Like, it's going to be very exciting. Those are my two that like definitely came to mind, because like they're already really competitive, but like we know like it can be more. The Aravaipa putting them on the live stream that already exists, like everything's already in place for these to be like major global events. What do you got?
So my three, the first one is the Tusher 70K, but really the entire Tusher's race series. I have always felt that if you were feeling frustrated, AKA Jeff, by the Hard Rock Lottery, one of the amazing alternatives out there are the Tusher's Mountain races. I think that this race series could be inserted into any mountain racing competitive circuit and people would be like, wow, I can't believe I've waited all this time just to get there. Brett, I know you ran it last year and loved it. Super tough race, super beautiful race, super remote location. That one's amazing. My next one, because I'm super high on Idaho right now, is the Stanhope 100. I think that a loop course in the Pioneer Mountains is baller. I actually might sign up for this race next year because it looks so cool. Scott McCubre gave me that one. And then Cocodona 250. I think that, when you think about ways that we can innovate our storytelling in the sport and excitement in the sport, I think that this 200-mile scene is a really interesting canvas for art and philosophy and grit and storytelling. And Jamil, I think, has created the best 200-plus-mile race in the country to date. And I hope other race directors use this as like a template for how to get as creative as possible in their own backyards. Like, we're seeing the proliferation of the backyard ultras. I want to see more 200 mile races, and I want to see them more in the image of Cocodona for their regions. So I would say those three. I hope Cocodona, and I hope that whole week in May becomes like all the best elements of UTMB ported over to America without all the bad parts of UTMB. So those are my three. What you got, Jeff?
It's a hard question. I think in general, at least for the US, more US runners should be looking at the Canadian ultra races, Ultra Trail Hurricana, the Golden, I think it's a 100-miler in Golden, British Columbia. Like, the ski community in the US flocks to Canada to ski in the winter. The Canadian Rockies are so stunning, and it happens that they're really cold in the winter. And in the summer, they're just lush with wildflowers. So for me, like the, I think it's maybe the Golden 100, the like in Golden, British Columbia, that's up there as like, I think general attention given to Canadian trail races. They need more love, and I think they'll start seeing more love. Tushers has been on my list of like races I've wanted to do for a long time. That's still high on that list. I really want to make it happen. I think my brain went toward more the potential for growth of sport. And I really see that falling in the shorter distance races, the sub ultra, and, you know, following in the footsteps of like the program that Western State has for their like collegiate trail running. I think in the Mountain West, at least, and hopefully around the Southeast, hopefully nationwide, we see more colleges lean into college trail running programs. It's where like our sport could, or at least the US's presence in the sport on something like a World Mountain Trail Running stage could benefit the most, is these trail 10Ks to trail marathons. And like right off the bat, I do think kind of the Asheville, Smokies, North Carolina scene has a ton of potential to actually foster the most growth for like competitive trail runners if they lean into shorter races for college, kind of college age or younger. Dakota's a freak example of someone who really wanted to run like 100 milers in high school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the aid station captain at Telluride during Hard Rock this year, his name was Jack. Jack's like a sophomore at Western and yep. So jazzed on Hard Rock, third year volunteering. It's not often you get kids into the sport in high school, but college is definitely a time where like we're seeing post-collegiate runners leaning toward trail running. Like, I quit running for my college after my sophomore year because I honestly just wanted to run in the mountains more. Facilitating that growth of the sport is huge. So, I think it is happening in Colorado and Utah, probably in California and the Northwest a little bit. I think Southeast, Northeast, there's so much potential. I know that doesn't really give a specific race in mind, but to take a example race series, the Cirque series, you know, those Western runners are at pretty much every Cirque series race. And over in Utah for the Cirque series races, the US like junior Nordic team or the Nordic team is showing up and just like kicking butt. So, sub ultra, probably the future if we want ultra to grow.
See, this is why Jeff should just be on most of these long run archives. Like, like that's the answer that we needed. Not the answer we deserve or something like that. I mean, I also, one of the, like the first, like, I don't know. It's like what's my knee jerk reaction to every single one of these questions that we have listed. And like my knee jerk reaction to that was like,
donut 401k.
We don't need more races to get bigger. Like we just need, like, I want the competition to get deeper at a smaller number of races. But then it's like, okay, if a small race gets bigger and gets really competitive, which race does it replace? And like, are there races that could be replaced and I wouldn't be too sad about that exist out there? Yes. But then what happens when I get to that point where I'm like, I don't want any more of these races to get replaced by other races? Like, then it's saturated. And then I was like, well, shoot, now I don't want to answer this question anymore.
Yeah, one of the downsides of our sport is just the limited opportunities that people have to race each year, just given the beat down you take each time you step on a start line and finish one of these things. So we have to be selective, right? We have to be careful in how we curate.
Yeah. Yeah. And like,
if we're strictly thinking growth, I think you're going to see Mammoth Trail Fest go through the roof. I think you're going to see any race that Free Trail is behind go through the roof. They are catalyzing the community in their respective areas in a really cool way. I think honestly, there's some pretty available real estate in the Wasatch for something now that Speed Goat is a UTMB race, and Speed Goat sells out now. I've wanted to do the rut since I moved to Colorado in 2016. I still have not done the rut. Like, it sells out really quick, and I just can't plan my September that far in advance. So like, if there is a race that is knocking it out of the park, having a secondary option that, you know, could be doubled down for runners, or, you know, could be a separate focus for those runners that don't get into their target race is always a good thing.
Last thing we should talk about before we close up is, Brett, your idea of this race that starts at some location and your goal is to get as far away as possible in 24 hours. And I guess the question for this episode is, where should the race start to make it interesting, and what factors or guideposts should we include to make it as interesting as possible? So lead us off.
Well, so, I mean, if there's anything I've learned in my 32 years on this earth, it's that there's no such thing as a new idea anymore. So right before we started recording, Jeff texts us and sends a link to a race over, where was it? Over in England? Over in the UK?
Yeah. In London.
Escape from Meriden. And it is that idea where you start, everyone starts in one spot. And when I guess the way that this race goes is you have, was it 30 hours, 24, 30 hours,
24 or 36, okay, depending on whether or not you choose the chained category.
Yeah. Okay. So you have
Escape from Meriden, this race, look it up. It a little sadistic, definitely masochistic.
Yeah.
Somewhat in like the realm of Barclays in terms of like, let's try to make something super hard.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So like, I think you all start in a pretty densely wooded kind of in the middle of nowhere type location, and you have an amount of time to get as far away from there as possible on foot. There's no aid stations. There's no maps. You do whatever you want, as you know, as long as it's on foot. And the way you win is by getting as far away as possible. But the distance that they measure it is as the crow flies. So it's just like a straight line. So like, you got to make sure that you're not like zigzagging around too much, and pretty much they encourage just going straight in some direction. But then, you know, I was thinking about like variations to this race that could make it interesting. So like, you know, we're like, oh man, what if you had this race in Silverton where you just start going if it's purely just to go like as far away as possible, there might only be a few potential options. But then we were thinking like, okay, what if there was a vert bonus? So for every like, I don't know, 750 or 1,000 feet of vert that you gain, you get a bonus mile or some sort of distance so that way it encourages you picking a very creative route. If you're a stronger climber and you think, okay, then if I just go this way, I'll bag like 20,000 feet of vert on my way out of the San Juans or something like that. You know, then I started looking at like, oh, Jeff lives in Carbondale. What does this race look like in Carbondale? And I was like, oh, this race is fascinating in Carbondale. I looked at it in Salt Lake. I was like, this race is also fascinating in Salt Lake, whether you decide to just like go south and run straight and get no vert bonus, or go up into the mountains, like try and go through the highway. And it would just be so fun to watch on, you know, on a screen where there's just all these GPS pings that keep just spreading out in some circle with various graphs of the ridiculous routes that people have gone. Finn, would you do this race?
I don't know if I would do this particular format, only because I think instead of going the farthest away from a given point in 24 hours, I would just want to create some interesting course starting from a given point. It could be a loop, it could be a figure eight, it could be something of that nature. But the idea of just arbitrarily going like north, east, west, or south, or some variation of that in one single direction, I think more of my creative juices would be in like creating some sort of loop or like a figure eight from my house.
Like create the best Strava art in 24 hours.
Strava art. Yes.
I've toyed with this idea from Carbondale of like choosing the cardinal direction and just going and not trying, like really just trying to stay on a straight line. Because mm-hmm. I think that's where it gets really cool, because you are definitely off trail. You're definitely bushwhacking. You're definitely going straight over the top of some mountains. You're like crossing rivers. But this Escape from Meridian race, we've got to watch it. It just happened this past fall, but they have apparently really good live tracking. They have like, they calculate the elevation, the route efficiency, all of these things for the results. So it does seem like if you were to start it in a specific location and set it up as a race, that you'd have to show up with your research. You'd have to like really know the route that you want to lean into.
Yeah, because looking at the like the race info, one of the things that they said was like, are there aid stations? And they're like, no. You better know exactly on the route that you go on, like where there's going to be streams for water or where there's going to be pubs for food. Like you got to have that figured out, because if you just showed up with a couple hours worth of fuel and started running in one direction, like what if you didn't account for the fact that you're on a highway and you're not going to see a gas station for like 65 miles?
Kudos to the UK. I mean, from fell running to really leaning into this cardinal direction racing,
true that.
They're creative. They did a, I think it was this like final season of Game of Thrones. They screened the entire final season from a truck with a billboard movie screen on the back for a marathon of people running to follow the truck and watch Game of Thrones as they ran around the city. I actually think it was every season of Game of Thrones. I think it was like amazing. 100-hour run.
Oh my gosh, dude. That's so
UK is creative.
So going back to that other question, like what small races do we want to see like blow up and get more competitive? It's this race in the UK, the Escape from Meriden. That's the answer, because I will be tuning in to this year's version or this year's edition of it.
I think your news alert, your breaking news that Zach Miller is going to go for run rim to rim to rim. I've been thinking about it all year of just like any athlete that wants to make a statement, you know, Ben Demon, maybe he didn't have the best race at UTMB. Jack Quenzel has actually tried rim to rim to rim, and I don't think he wants to go back. He tried it years ago, but like that is just, it's not a low hanging fruit, but it's there. It's there for the taking. And, we've seen so much FKT growth, especially since 2020. I do think if they do a better job facilitating the ultra classic routes, that it's such a fun avenue to be able to choose your own timing.
Yeah.
Like actually fit that into your, as we said, race schedules that get really busy. You know, in my opinion, Carl Sabe's like PCT might have been the performance of the year across all like running things this past year, with the exception of Courtney's combined three performances. Not everyone's going to do the PCT for an FKT, but rim to rim to rim, or rim to rim, or I don't know. There's a lot of iconic trails. The Wonderland, like 100 miler, choose your time. I think if we do a better job of establishing like these are the classic routes, see a lot more efforts on those classic routes.
I gotta say, I came into this episode pretty open-minded, and both of you guys gave me a ton of ideas, including that last one, Jeff, to kind of mull over post episode. I think this episode reminded me that trail running first and foremost is very much a soul sport, and whenever we're thinking about ways to make it better or to revive like the good old days or things we love about it, we kind of have to come back to the art, the philosophy, the creativity, and just like the personalities of the people that make it cool. So that gave me a lot of food for thought. That's kind of my parting idea for this episode. Brett, What are your final words?
I mean, now I'm so excited to see how Zach does. I can't wait to follow this. Like, will the tracking be live?
I think it will.
I mean, yeah, it's got to be if there's a spot tracker. So
that's keep going. I'll try to find this on
it. Yeah. So, I mean,
does he go sub 550? Does he go sub 545? Honestly, I just think just yes. I think if we asked Jim if he went back,
he said he left time out there.
Yeah, I think he could. Jim went down very, very fast on his first descent.
But, too fast?
The second fastest that anyone's ever gone down is still Jim's.
So perhaps a little too quick.
So yeah. I got a little bit more context here. Zach also writes, as of now, we are shooting for a 7 a.m. start time. I will likely go earlier if we get word that mule trains are leaving earlier than that. If anyone has any beta, message me. Many thanks in advance to Cordis Hall, Abby Hall, Jeff Browning, and Jared Hazen for the crewing help. Thanks also to Jim Walmsley for setting such a stout time to chase. I greatly respect the record and will be over the moon if I manage to get it. Link for live tracking below. So he's got the live track.
Right on. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. We're still amidst, you know, the growing pains and the drama that seems to be existing more and more in our sport these days. You know, when you boil a lot of that away, there's still a lot of good things to be looking forward to.
Definitely. Yeah. My parting thought is I'd like to run the Hard Rock 100, but I'm really, really excited about going back to Western States this year.
Oh, shoot. Where is my Hard Rock stationery? I'll just write you a letter.
Brett, I followed you on Strava.
Okay. We'll get that group message going.
Brett, I appreciate you so much. Jeff, appreciate you so much. And I think we all appreciate you so much, Corinne. And we're looking forward to next steps on the commentary side of things for you. But until next time, this has been the Long Run Archives. And thanks for tuning in.